Cover Story, a new investigative podcast by New York Magazine that's got a lot of people on edge.
What is the number one rule? We would all go, don't f*** your clients.
It's a gnarly personal look at the underground psychedelic therapy world and its boundary problems.
All my clients try to have sex with me during these sessions, and I was like, I don't think I'm going to try to have sex with you. And he's like, yeah, you will.
Cover Story, Season 1. Power Trip. Check it out on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
Batter Up.
All right, hello Facebook. Welcome to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 110 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by all of my lovely co-hosts. As you can see, if you're watching this live on Facebook, I am joined by Linda Servich. Hello, Linda.
Hello.
Maggie Wiggin. Hello, Maggie.
Hi.
And Kellyanne Healy. Hello, Kellyanne.
Hello.
So this is our annual cookie podcast, which we usually do live because it's much more fun to have a visual when we're eating cookies. And so we're just going to eat cookies and talk about the Mets. That's like what this is it. That's what this is about.
And we will deliver on those promises.
We will. And we will answer your questions. If you have questions for us, feel free to drop them in the Facebook comments. We've got Brian, podcast dad, monitoring the comments for us. Hi, Brian.
Hello.
And he will help us out. So if you have questions for us beyond what we are already discussing, then feel free to drop them in the comments. But yeah, it's you guys. Do we want to like tell everyone what cookies we have on hand here?
Sure.
Let's start with Linda. What cookies you got, Linda?
Well, I did not get insomnia cookies this year, but I was out sick last week, not COVID, it was cold, to be clear. And then when I came back, a lovely patron and her daughters baked me cookies.
That's awesome.
So, and she even got like this cute little tin, and it was just such a nice surprise to come back to after I wasn't feeling well and still a little stuffy. So I have these, and then I have a baking mishap gone wrong that I did with my sister. So I have two of cookies that I made myself. So those are my cookies.
Baking mishaps. But you've got the homemade stuff, so that's good.
I do, yes.
How about you, Kellyanne? What cookies do you have?
I'm being snobby tonight. I have French macarons.
Yay!
I have no idea what flavors they are, so maybe you guys can choose what flavor I should try first. I have like some semblance of an idea what some might be. Like this is obviously chocolate, but everything else, I don't know.
So really, we're voting on a color here.
Yeah, yes. We're voting on.
We are voting on a color.
Oh, do I see a purple?
Yes, there is purple. This one's purple.
We're voting. I think we're preemptively voting for purple. I think we're all voting for purple.
All in favor? Okay.
Purple.
Okay.
Purple. All right. Okay. Well, Maggie, what cookies do you have?
Okay. Insomnia and I had some trouble getting ourselves on the same page this weekend. There were some disappointed, partially fulfilled orders, but this was the weekend that I did all the baking for the kids' teachers. So I have these ginger snaps, not ginger snaps. That's not really a good descriptor of them. They're like a chewy kind of molasses-y ginger cookie. I will describe them in much more detail later on because they are amazing. Why I make them all the time.
Can you Willy Wonka some over to me, please?
I can send you the recipe.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I love
so
you.
I think I'm the only one here with insomnia cookies. I do have insomnia.
Gosh, you weirdo.
I tried, man.
One just fell on the laptop. It's fine.
Stick in some rice.
You know, it's okay. We're okay. But I don't want to tilt it too far lest they fall again. But here they are. There's three of them. I got a total box of six, but I only have three right here. And one of them is very similar, probably, to what Maggie has. So I might eat that one
and
first.
If you think you're ordering that insomnia cookie in the upper Manhattan area, you got another thing coming because They do not exist on this
DC aisle. DC Insomnia cookies came through on the other hand, although they did not have the red velvet cookies and cream, which I was really upset about because I really wanted to try that one and it was a holiday flavor, but they were out of it. But they told me that ahead of time, unlike with Maggie. but the holiday flavor that they did have is their gingerbread, which is very similar to what Maggie described. Like, it's a ginger cookie, but it's not like, it's not a snap. It's not a hard.
And also not a gingerbread. It is not right. Designed for sculpting.
Correct. So it's just like, it's just a molasses-y soft gingery cookie. So I'll probably eat that one first. And then on my, plate, I also have the classic M&M's one, which is my personal favorite of the Insomnia like staple ones. And then I have the giant deluxe cookie because I got the Super Six box, which you get like five, or I can't remember if it's five or six, but it's like five or six like regular cookies. Then you can choose one deluxe one. So this one's giant and it's salted caramel and I'm very excited.
That is one of the best.
So that's my cookie assortment. There are, we also got, but I saved for Michael, snickerdoodle, sugar, and I think that's it. No, peanut butter chip. We got a peanut butter chip one. So those are in the other room and they're for Michael and I'm letting him have them because I am a benevolent person.
I got a Facebook notification the other day, yesterday, that it was on this date last year that I traded a box of cookies for a sofa.
Yeah, 1 year anniversary of trading the cookies for a sofa.
So that was yesterday. So I've had my
full circle. Yeah. Do you still have the sofa?
Huh?
You still have the sofa?
I do. It's in my spare bedroom.
Happy sofa-versary.
Yes. It's basically Maddie's.
Happy sofa-versary, Linda. Okay, so if we all want to get started with our cookies, we can get started with our cookies and our chaiing mets. So I'm gonna dig right in here with the gingerbread first, and then I'll get started talking about the mets. I'm dipping it in my milk. I do have milk. I didn't show everyone that, but I do.
Yeah, I got the milk too.
I'm still a non-drink milk drinker. I don't do it.
I bought milk specifically for this. We were out of milk. I got it for this.
I have really water good. On one side. I have wine on the other.
Oh, you need water for the palate cleanser.
Yes.
Excellent.
Should we all dig in? Or are we giving our review?
Are we going to say, are we going to do like individual cookies like we usually do?
I'm also okay just eating because I'm really...
Yeah, for real.
I could do both.
So, about the Mets. So a lot has happened since the last time we talked about the Mets. Because we haven't talked about the Mets on this podcast in quite some time. The Mets have signed four players in addition to hiring a manager since the last time we talked about them. So
and they've also been in a lockout for 3 weeks, which gives you a sense of how quickly all that stuff happened since we last talked about the Mets.
Yeah. Can I just say that we're probably going to not have new episodes of the Cookie Club because of the lockout. Thanks, Manfred.
Yeah,
so this
really.
This is like basically the only Cookie Club that's out there right now.
Tell your friends.
Yep.
We're the only Cookie Club in town.
In town now.
Coming in live
with cookies. So, let's review the signings, shall we? Because they happened in very short succession. So they signed Eduardo Escobar to a 2-year deal worth $20 million with a club option for 2024. They signed Mark Canha for 2 years for $26.5 million with a club option for 2024.
He likes sandwiches, so yeah.
Yes. He's a foodie.
You can.
And then they signed Starling Marte for 4 years and $78 million. And of course, the cherry on top, they signed Max Scherzer for 3 years, $130 million. The first
Who's that guy? He sounds good.
Yeah.
I heard he's decent.
Yeah, I've heard he's good.
I forget what that eye thing is called. He's got two different colored eyes.
Heterochromia. Yes.
He's got heterochromia. I heard that guy does that.
My my cousins have a dog with that. It's a husky.
Yeah, Scherzer also has dogs with it. on purpose. The Scherzers have dogs that have the same eyes as Scherzer, which is very cool. Shout out to the Scherzers. They're big in the like rescue community, I've heard. So they're big in like big donors to, you know, animal rescues and things like that, which is really cool. So that's awesome. Shout out to Max and Erica Scherzer for that. But
I always appreciate the Mets signing somebody who is weird.
Yes.
And in a largely benign way.
Yeah. Normally the type of weird that the Mets are gravitated to is not what you want.
No.
But yes, I am pro weirdo in all contexts.
Anyway, so the first three of those signings came in like very short succession. On Black Friday, no less.
Yeah, was it two? Was it Marte and Escobar on the same day? Or
it was all three. It was
all three.
Yeah. Escobar Marte was later in the day, I think.
Yeah.
Escobar they were all came on first. The same day.
Escobar yeah. came first, which is like, it was kind of, it reminds me of that. And, you know, I know there's a lot of like crossover baseball wrestling fans that we are not the right podcast for that, but there are other podcasts for that, including our own From Complex to Queens is one of them. But I do know there's like a meme with one of the big wrestling guys, like, God, I don't even know his name, which is going to be embarrassing for people who know what they're talking about when it comes to wrestling, because I know he's like a big deal. But the, you know, the progression of him getting more and more excited. That's what that
Vince McMahon.
That guy
might have been Vince McMahon. Is it Vince McMahon? I know who Vince McMahon is.
Michael's going to be very upset with you.
Well, I don't know. Like, I don't know what all
that's a Michael problem.
Like. Yes, that is a Michael problem.
I don't know what all these dudes look like, even if I know their names. But anyway,
so it's Vince McMahon.
Yeah, I think it might be Vince McMahon. But he's like getting progressively more excited, and that's what it was like because Escobar came first, and it was just like, okay, like this is a pretty sandy, like Metsy sort of move. Like this is the type of thing they like jumped the market to get the like their like utility fourth infielder of choice. And you know, they did that. And I was like, this is fine. And then they signed Mark Canhan. It was like, oh yeah, that's a really good move. That's probably a solid move for the Mets. Like, cool. They're working on, they're filling in their outfield. That's great. And then they signed Starling Marte and it was like, all right, now we're talking.
Now we're building up to something here.
Now we're talking. Like the one of their biggest needs in the offseason, arguably the biggest need, was center field, and they signed the best center fielder available. Cool. Very exciting. And then it was like, so those three happened in one day. And then the following Monday, so this was Black Friday when all those three happened, and Marte happened later in the day. The first two happened, like Escobar first, and then Canha like less than an hour later. It was like in the afternoon both. And then like evening was Starling Marte. And then there was like a whole weekend. And then on Monday is when the Scherzer thing happened. And I remember
you say on Monday, it took like a day and a half.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Yeah, because we were all up Sunday night waiting.
Yeah.
Like, I was. Yeah.
Everybody was waiting, and I was like, no, he probably went to sleep to think on
he
it.
Did.
So I'm going to go to sleep too.
I stayed up till 3 a.m. like a goddamn jabroni.
And I was up until like 1:30. And on a Sunday night,
I was most heartily owned. Like I stayed.
I said
solely.
I was gonna quit at 11, and I did stick it out to 11:30, and deeply regretted it. So
I was doing
grad work, so I just remember posting the gif of Boo from Monsters Inc. as she falls asleep on Sally's bed after she giggles. So I feel like Scherzer was trolling everybody. He's like, I'm gonna just let everybody simmer.
He did in the Athletic article. They confirmed he went to bed.
Yeah, I didn't realize it confirmed.
Yeah, literally, he went to bed.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. Like, I didn't realize that.
Fast asleep, not a care in the world. Just like
anytime Mets fans and Mets Twitter and Mets reporters are all a tizzy,
losing their goddamn mind.
We're all freaking out.
Because this, like, to set the stage of the drama here, it wasn't just like, oh, the Mets are in on Scherzer; they're pursuing Scherzer. There was Kevin Gausman alongside. So it was basically like the Mets were pursuing, you know, the top tier of the pitching market, because other than center field, just knocked my microphone, other than center field, their biggest need was starting pitching. And they needed at least one top tier starter. And they were reported to be in on like the top tier starters, particularly Gausman and Scherzer. And the Gausman like rumors were earlier, like they started sooner so that they were connected to Gausman. And then like those intensified to a pretty high level to the point where it was kind of like you thought that Gausman, they might sign him. And then it and then Gausman signed with and then like and then the Scherzer rumors started to heat up. And then it was like, oh, Steve Cohen really wants Max Scherzer. And then like Gausman signed with the Blue Jays. So it got to the point where it was like, oh, they need to sign Scherzer or they're kind of screwed.
And then like, John Gray signed that night.
And John Gray signed that night too.
There was a third name in there. I was like, okay, so these guys are there are the backup plan if they don't sign Scherzer. And I was convinced that Scherzer was going to fall apart at the last minute.
I would have been so upset.
Well, basically, the Athletic said he went to bed and, like, nothing changed when he woke up. And it's like, all right, I'm just going to sign.
Yeah. Well, that's why I was like, look, if I wake up and they didn't sign him, then I know they're not going to sign him. And I can just, like, go about my day. And then it just kept, like, simmering.
Yeah. And but they also set us up for failure for signing Marte so late. So I was like, well, if they signed him late, maybe Scherzer will get
the late. And I was the one that wrote up the Marte signing for Amazing Avenue because I was the only one awake. I was like, oh, I got this. It was like 12:30, I think, at night. Like, it was technically the next morning, I think. It was after midnight, I'm pretty sure. Not too long after, but I think I published the article at like 12:30. And so I was like, well, I'm awake. I guess I'll take this. I'm probably one of the only people awake for this. So I felt like I got rewarded for that. So I was like, well, I'll stay up for Scherzer. No one else will be awake besides me, the crazy person who always stays up late. And I was I sat there and like read my book and I was like, all right, well, I'm going to finish my book. And if I finish my book and he still's inside, and I'm going to bed. And it was 3 a.m. when I finished my book. And I was like, well, oh, well.
Was it good?
It was good.
What book was it?
Oh, what book was I finishing at that point? Oh, my goodness. I think it was Deacon King Kong by James McBride. So, and I'm reading.
Oh, yeah, that was the purple macaron.
What flavor was it?
It was good. I think it was like a raspberry jam, like fruity. It's okay. It's okay.
You don't seem too enthused.
I'm not totally enthused about it because
sounds like it might be a little too sweet would be my guess.
Jammy
raspberry something.
Yeah, I can't put my finger on what I mean, it's not bad. I shouldn't say it's bad, but it's not my favorite.
Fair.
So
show us the box so we can go on the next one.
Oh. So there's green, there's yellow, there's beige, there's rose, which I think is actually rose, and then there's brown, which is obviously chocolate. So
rose or chocolate.
I'm guessing the green one is either green tea or pistachio. Yeah. I can't tell because usually the ones I've seen, pistachio like has some nuts in the cookie and I don't.
Matcha has such a strong smell though. Like if you sniff it, does it smell like green tea?
Let's see. It does not. It smells like pistachio.
Well, that solves that.
I was trying not to smell them. I kind of wanted it to be a surprise.
I'll vote for the pink one too, thinking it's probably rose. But yes, it could be strawberry.
It could be.
Yes, it could be.
I would vote for that one also. Okay. And I'm going to go ahead and theorize that the yellow is mango.
Okay.
Or passion fruit.
I'm going to theorize that it's lemon.
Lemon.
I was thinking lemon too. But I'll do the pink one first.
Pink one.
The beige is probably vanilla.
I think it's vanilla. I think the beige is probably vanilla.
I think it's almond.
Oh, possibly.
That makes sense.
Ooh, wild card almond.
All right. Let's see.
What is it?
It is. Okay.
Strawberry.
Yeah.
And it's good.
That's good.
Excellent.
Better than the raspberry?
Yes.
Okay. Excellent.
Nice. So with the Scherzer signing, it was very like, and then just the next day it happened. And I think that everyone was really excited about it. But I think the difference between Scherzer and the other signings, other than like just the sheer like magnitude of it, like he's clearly the biggest star that they signed, was just that with the others, it was like pretty, it was either like with Escobar, it was either just like, yeah, this is fine. Like it's hard to have a hot take about this and Kanha was sort of similar to that. Or Marte was just like very obvious where like he was essentially the only option that filled their need. But with Scherzer, it was like, there were other like players available. Like they chose not basically in the end, they basically chose him over Gaussman. So mm-hmm. it's kind of like, was that the right choice? Do we think?
Well, looks, we actually have a Facebook question Ooh. About that right now.
Oh, cool.
Her Brian, he said. So Brian from Jersey wants to know if y'all were Team Scherzer or Team Gaussman. So that's like,
oh yeah, yeah. Were we Team Scherzer? Perfect segue.
Yes. I won't lie. I was Team Gaussman just because I worry about Scherzer's age and I worry just about the Mets just generally being the Mets and having him get injured during the season. That's kind of like oh my God, I can't remember the phrase. Paranoia, I guess, talking, but yeah, that's why I was for Gaussman over Scherzer. And yeah.
Don't doubt for a second that the Mets could injure Gaussman too.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I feel like never underestimate them, but I feel like them injuring Scherzer after he's been so good and so durable, that would be like the bigger story to me.
He's been having back issues, but
yeah.
To me, Scherzer always seemed like, it just seemed like a pipe dream. There was always the rumor that he wanted to stay on the West Coast. He wasn't going back to a National League team. Like, it didn't seem
and
real.
He debunked all that immediately.
He did, yeah. Too,
which was my favorite part of it.
I mean,
my favorite was when he said, I'm not here to talk about the Dodgers.
So, I always think of Scherzer as like a fairly like, serious focused dude, and so I just didn't think that he would want like the sideshow act.
Yes,
but he's also the kind of player who can walk into a place and change the atmosphere like that. Yes. And I think that's really what happened. I was always Team Scherzer because I feel like I thought he would probably sign for 2 years. I'm not mad that he signed for three by any means. And that's just a short enough deal that you can really like, you can really take that risk. And, if the last year and a half of that contract isn't so great, it's also coming at a time when they don't necessarily have a lot of other potential dead money on the books. It's sort of like staggered well, because Lindor will still be at his peak. And I think Cano will be gone by then. So like, I feel like that's what the good teams do, is they take these, they make these deals that they know the last year is potentially a wash. And you just try to line it up so that you don't have those last years hitting all at the same time.
Yeah.
Well, and then
it
showed, we talked about this, ad nauseum last year that, they didn't take money at the deadline. Like, right, Colin has never put his money where his mouth is. And now he did.
Yeah. So he did give big money to Lindor. I will give him credit for that.
They stopped. It was like another half measure. Like, Lindor was good, but they needed to keep going. So now this offseason, I think he showed he wasn't satisfied with just good or half measures. Like, and he actually backed it up that the Mets will outbid anybody, because I think the Angels tried for Scherzer. It looked like, Allison, was it you? It was like, it's so fun being on the other side of "we tried." Like,
yes,
I think the Marlins did it for Marte. Like, now, like, we're the benefits of that, which is fine.
And it's nice to see that Cohen kind of, in hindsight, and this is totally a hindsight thing, kind of took that year, sort of made that one big move, but also I guess he had to weather a lot of nonsense too with Porter and with Zach Scott. But it was like a get to know the team period before, hey, making all these big moves, investing in an analytics team, investing in improving the stadium. So he's doing a lot of things, and I hope we can see it come to fruition in spring 2022, because the lockout.
Yeah.
Well, they also talked about,
I was like, because of the COVID, but like, no, it's, that one's the lockout. There's so many different things
going on
garbage right now
that could derail. But they also talked about, they needed clubhouse guys and leaders. Yeah. And I think there's no doubt now that they actually have that. Yeah. Like you said, Scherzer just completely changed, like his presence alone just completely changed. It's like Jake will never be that guy. Like Jake just quietly goes about his business and that's that. But Scherzer could be that guy that
he's a loudmouth, but yeah, in like a good way.
Allison, I think it was you who was like, he'll stuff McNeil in the locker. He doesn't like listen.
I think I did say something like that. I think I was team Scherzer in the end. I would have been happy with either of them. In fact, I was why not both? You know,
yes.
Like,
and they did try for both. Boston took the lesser deal.
They did try for both. So that was really encouraging to me because I think the Mets would have had a really damn good rotation if they had gotten both. But if I had to pick one or the other, I think it's close. Like I would have been very happy with either one. Don't get me wrong, especially because Gausman's like in his prime. But I think I would give the slight edge to Scherzer because to me, it's like one of those situations where it's like, when you have a 3-time Cy Young Award winner who's a free agent, you kind of, and you have a need in starting pitching, you kind of just have to do it. Like, whatever it takes, you get that guy on your team. Like, it just is, like, it's a necessity. And like Linda was saying, you have a guy in Max Scherzer who, during this time of the lockout, is one of the highest ranking people in the union, in the players union on the player side. And I think that sets a really good example. And he said during his press conference, he talked about the lockout and how we just want a more competitive environment and stuff like that. And he was really well spoken on the whole issue. And just having a guy like that, especially with the departure of Conforto, who was the previous player rep, for the union on the Mets, having a guy like that on the team, I think means a lot. Just, you know, and the fact that he took this monster deal, he said, like, this isn't just for me. It's for everybody who comes after me. He had to go with the highest bidder, not just for himself, but to set an example, and it trickles down, like everybody under him now benefits from that. And he said during the presser too, like, this isn't just my doing, like everybody that came before helped me get this deal, helped me get this money. So I have to pay it forward too. And I thought that was really, really huge when he said that. And he also talked about, like, when they asked him a lot about, like, oh, what, how do you think about playing in New York and all that stuff? The questions they always ask, like, can you handle New York? He said, like, he said something like, the pressure is not like a deterrent, it's a privilege. And I thought that was really, really well said, too. Well, so,
speaking of Conforto, like, everybody said, like, he was the leader because he was just there longest. And the team underachieved. Like, he's your leader. So I know we all love Conforto and everything, but he just didn't seem like the guy that could motivate the team. Keep them on track.
He never really tried to take on that role, though, because he was also one of the youngest. He was also one of the younger guys on the team. And, you know, I mean, he was the player rep, but, you know, and he answered a lot of post-game questions, but, like, he was never a guy who was like, yes, this is my role. And I mean, I don't think it wasn't really a natural fit for him to have that role anyway. And I like Conforto a lot. And for that matter, like, if they still wanted to go out and sign him, like, I would be like, A-okay with that. Like, give me Nimmo, Marte, Conforto in any outfield. Like, yes, please. Thumbs up. But yeah, no, I don't think that's not who he is.
And I mean, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they needed that one guy.
They need that guy who kind of takes that. I mean, they have to be like kind of step into what David Wright did.
They've been lacking
that. They've been lacking that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think in the longer term, you know, and there was a lot of conversation about this when he first came to the Mets and we signed, but like, I do think Lindor is that kind of a guy, player. But I think he's also 27 years old and was starting in a like brand new high pressure city. And that is a lot to be processing and also stepping into that role. And I think this is actually a really nice arrangement because you know, Scherzer's going to be the de facto leader of that clubhouse for the time that he's here. And in that period of time also, like, Lindor can settle into himself a little, like, find his own voice. And, you know, or any other number of Mets could step forward and take over that role too. Like, I think in terms of giving a lot of the interesting and powerful young personalities in the clubhouse, like, a model, that's a pretty good one to go with.
You know who I think could have helped with that? Cano.
Yeah.
They were missing Cano. And in 2019, when he was there, they went on a run. And I think, you know, they did say he was great in the club. Like, he helped Pete in the home run derby. Like, Pete went to him for advice. Like, and I think he was very willing to get it.
And I know he and Ahmed Rosario were really close.
Yeah, he was a great mentor to Ahmed. And so I think he was another one that, you know, for his, through his own fault, they were missing. But he did have that leader. I mean, whatever he did off the field, on the field, whatever.
I don't know if he's going to have the same cachet after kind of what, like, I'm not, like, privy to those conversations, and that may be a part of clubhouse culture that I'm just not as, like, savvy to, but I just get the vibe that that's the kind of thing that will lose you respect from other players, is like not just doing it, but doing it, like, multiple times. You know, it just, I don't know.
I know
last year, it's probably gone, but last year he probably could have helped.
In
that regard. Yeah. I know that Cano and Starling Marte talked when Starling Marte signed, but they also have that particular thing in common. But, you know,
Marte. Sandy Alderson also has a type.
Yeah.
Has, like, many types.
But Marte has not been
popular. Although, granted, Cano is not one of his.
Cano's
not, I acknowledge that.
But. And Marte was productive afterwards.
Too. Oh, yes, 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 so. Absolutely. I have no misgivings about the Marte signing because of that. No.
Cover Story, a new investigative podcast by New York Magazine that's got a lot of people on edge.
What is the number one rule? We would all go, don't f*** your clients.
It's a gnarly personal look at the underground psychedelic therapy world and its boundary problems.
All my clients try to have sex with me during these sessions, and I was like, I don't think I'm going to try to have sex with you. And he's like, yeah, you will.
Cover Story, Season 1. Power Trip. Check it out on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
And so we have a question from Kate, who wants to know, with the current spread of Omicron burning through sports leagues, do you think that vaccine mandates will be part of the CBA negotiations when they do come back to the table?
Well, they have to be.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
Especially for the Blue, you can't play in Canada without being vaccinated. So
I do wish you could just, like, call up Bradford right now, because he's the one who would have so much to say on this.
Yeah.
No, I don't think, I don't see how they can avoid it as like, I mean, which is not to say that, like, there definitely will or won't be vaccine mandates, but it's going to be,
a huge
bargaining chip on both sides.
Yes.
And I agree. Like, I don't see how are you going to play the Blue Jays if you can't go to Canada? Like,
all the Blue Jays have to be vaccinated.
And I think there's, I don't know. I mean, I think with what we're seeing in other sports leagues, like, there may be some political will within MLB to get it done. I don't know. I hope so.
And the Blue Jays,
I think off the topic of the players, we're going to have to watch out to see if fans are allowed in again. Like, just speaking from personal experience right now, we're masking up again and canceling all our in-person programs. We've gone virtual again just because of the rise of this. We have in the district, I think it's like 200 to 300 students across the district out right now because they have it or they've come into contact with someone and need to quarantine. So,
I think I just don't think they're going to do it. I mean, I don't think that we're talking about political will. I don't think that's fair. I don't think it just burns out quickly enough that.
And we have no idea what this will look like come March, April. We don't know.
Yeah.
If there is.
And baseball's different because it's open air. Like, arenas,
Yeah.
You know, they're all indoors and they're still letting people in. You mean MSG right now, you need facts and proof of vaccination. So I feel like that's probably just.
Well, and hopefully that would also cover baseball stadiums since there are, you know, indoor areas.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. We'll see.
The owners are not going to let them like close the fans out again.
Yeah. No, I don't think
it's going to. Unless they're forced to.
I think there is a wide range of outcomes in terms of whether that's perfectly fine or an absolutely terrible idea.
Right. Yeah, but, of course.
You know.
But it's something that was on my mind. We'll
definitely find out.
So everything that just happened, like in the past 2 days.
And I mean, talking about the Blue Jays, we already know that the Blue Jays are like kind of, you know, getting rid of their unvaxxed players because they have to. Like our good old friend Steven Matz is not with the Blue Jays because of a certain thing. And, you know, I think that Robbie Ray is in the same boat. And, you know, it is affecting roster formation. And I think it is affecting the decisions that the Mets are making too.
Well, the Mets were one of the teams that never hit 85%.
They were. But I think that was to Sandy Alderson's chagrin to be fair.
Yes. You know, right.
It was.
Anybody who actually cares about the quality of the game, I mean, it should be in favor of vaccination.
Yeah.
Like Alderson, just as like a businessman, is like, why would I not want my assets to be able to serve their purpose for me? Like that's, right. You know,
yeah,
they can't do their job if they're in quarantine. Like
that's basically what the NHL did. They have a grand total of 5 players not vaccinated in the entire league. 5.
Wow.
So, and one player said they made it really hard on us. Like they basically, because they need to make sure their players can play in Canada. Like you don't want to play man down because you had to leave this moron back in the United States because he wouldn't get vaccinated.
Oh, there's going to be a lot of like phantom COVID IL things going on when teams travel to Canada. Like all of a sudden the Yankees are in a road trip to Toronto. Like, oh, 5 guys are suddenly on the COVID IL. That's what's going to start. That's what's going to happen. If there's not a
mandate. The Yankees make it tough on them saying we can't play short, either get vaxxed or. And I thought
the Yankees were one of the ones that met the 85%.
Well, they did. Yeah. But you know, that just because you're at 85%.
That's not going to stay the same this year.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. But
I mean, it's still just like, I mean, if you think, if you're thinking of a 26 man roster, I mean, that's still several players not available.
Right. Yeah.
I thought
if you really want to leave like Aaron Judge behind, Aaron Judge wasn't vaxxed, which we saw. Like, do you want to lose a series to the Blue Jays? Your closest who are good now. They were fighting for a wild card last year. Do you want to play without Aaron Judge in Toronto?
Yep. Oh boy. But
lots of moving parts here that we won't know. It might still not matter because of the lockout.
Yeah. I brought up Steven Matz, and I want to circle back to that really fast because I would like to thank Steven Matz's agent for making all of this possible because
He's gonna get the best rebound ever.
It seems like Steve Cohen rage spent because he got spurned by Steven Matz. And if that's what it takes, then that's what it takes. If the Mets win the World Series, give the MVP to Steven Matz's agent.
Like, we almost had Steven Matz, but we got Max Scherzer.
Max Scherzer, literally.
Like, what fantasy world are we living in?
All I can say about the other, like, to wrap up the Max Scherzer, like, discourse, all I have to say is I'm very much looking forward to wearing a Max Scherzer t-shirt to every single Mets-Nats game at Nats Park. I cannot wait. I am going to parade around in that thing with like a flashing arrow above my head. Oh, it's going to be great. I cannot wait for it. I've never been more chuffed.
Love that word.
Excellent use of that word.
Yes.
I might invest in are y'all are going to hate me for this. a black shirts or jersey.
I also have my eye on the black shirts or jersey. Also have my eye on my bank account and
yeah.
If there's anybody who wants selling that stuff, like $130. But it is absolutely on my wish list.
They posted that the Mets account posted that, I think it was the Mets account, posted the photo of him in the black jersey. So it's like, okay, now I'm into this.
It's a good look.
It is. Makes it look scarier too.
Which is awesome. Oh my God.
Exactly.
So scary.
So in addition to the player moves that the Mets have made, they also have announced their new manager, who just had his press conference today. Buck Showalter is the new manager of the New York Mets. Out of the three finalists, there was Buck Showalter, who they ultimately hired, Joe Espada, and Matt Quartero. I always forget how many R's there are in that guy's name.
Not Van Wagenen, but I'm glad we don't have to say it like 10 times a week.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It would have just been Q, and then that would have invited all sorts of discourse, but I have a feeling. But those were the three finalists, and Billy Epler talked about how, you know, they made it really hard for them to make a decision, but I think that Buck Showalter was the de facto favorite from the beginning, and the Mets ultimately hired him.
Two Max Scherzer wanted, right?
Yes. Yeah. But Steve Cohen or Billy Epler, I can't remember who, made it very clear that like they didn't consult with Max Scherzer on the hire because like, you know, that would be against the lockout. They can't be doing anyway. Who knows? Who knows how much effect that had, if any. It seems like the Mets fandom sort of immediately has split into like two camps. Basically, there's like the we love Buck, we love this hire because they love his like the fact that he's a veteran manager, the fact that he has experience. Oh, this team needs a sure hand. They need an experienced manager. Buck is the guy. And then like on the other hand, you have the fans who immediately hated this hire because they're like, he's an old stubborn man who's going to be resistant to analytics. He's going to not listen to the front office's input on things. And so I just, I don't know. I don't know where you guys fall on that spectrum, but I think that both those sides are sort of lacking the nuance that this question sort of deserves, in my opinion. But
I think I also saw a lot of people angry because I think it was the wild card decision he made. And I thought he made that. Wasn't that in extra innings? If I'm recalling that. I don't know if that's correct. I feel like that was in extra innings, though. So I'm happy from an experience standpoint. I was like, okay, they need to get someone with some experience. They can't just have someone random who has never managed before. We've kind of seen Mickey Callaway and Louis Rojas, but I feel for Louis Rojas a little more because he stepped into it in the middle of a pandemic. He was thrown in the fire in completely ridiculous, unheard of circumstances. So
it was extra innings, by the way.
Okay. I thought so. So that extra inning thing, like I don't weigh that too much against him because A, extra innings. So and kind of anything goes then. Chaos reigns, exactly. In terms of experience though, I wanted someone with experience. And that from that standpoint, I'm a happy woman. We'll see. Yeah.
I just geared myself up for it because I just assumed they would hire him. So I knew it was going to happen. So I made my peace with it. So I think it's like the definition of fine. I just didn't want Ausmus. Because my boss is a Tigers
fan. I was sure they were hiring Ausmus, and I was like, oh my God.
I've heard horror stories of Ausmus. Like, he had Scherzer, he had Price, he had Verlander, all on the same team. He had prime Miguel Cabrera, and he could not win with that team. Like, and he couldn't win with literal Mike Trout either. Like, he's had the peak. Like,
he's had some great players.
He's at the top of the top, basically. And couldn't do anything with them. And my boss, like, just what I texted her, what I saw the rumor, that they were thinking of Osmus, she just sent back a dumpster fire. Like, that was her response. And she goes, 2014, any seventh, she goes, watch any game from 2014, the seventh inning on, and you'll see what I'm talking about. You can pick any game. And then even Scherzer said he wanted Showalter, and Osmus was his former manager.
It's like, true.
He's not even supporting Osmus. Then you know something's not right there. And like you said, they weren't going to go with a fourth straight rookie manager because we're leaving out Carlos Beltran. So they weren't going to hire
yet. Never lost a single game.
Nope. Never won a single game either.
So they weren't going to hire yet another rookie manager. Yeah. It just wasn't going to happen.
Nor should it have. Should it have happened?
Yeah. So,
I mean, I'm of a similar mind of Linda. Is like, it's fine. Yeah. You know, do I reserve the right to change my tone on that? Fine. When he bunts like four times in a row in a game where that's a terrible idea, which is almost all of them. I reserve the right to deeply change my feelings on that. But like, I think every manager is going to make the choices that make you crazy. And I think there's going to be a lot of big feels in that clubhouse, and they do need somebody who at the very least believes that they can help keep that running smoothly. Like,
I mean, Showalter's no stranger to big feels in the clubhouse.
Yes, like, exactly. Yeah. Yes. He has an
impeccable reputation as a clubhouse leader, if yes. nothing else. Like, as far as him as an in-game tactician, I think that like Maggie said, every MLB manager has his flaws. There is no like really superb tacticians out there like to pick from. But I think that the advantage of Showalter over the others is that at least when he makes mistakes, they are relatively known quantities, as opposed to these other guys who we don't really know what they would be doing. And like, then those mistakes become are unknown quantities. It's kind of like they might screw up in new and special ways. Whereas Showalter, we kind of know like what like he has enough of a body of work at this point that we kind of know the types of things that he's inclined to do. As far as like, and I mean, I know I would have been happy no matter which of these three that they hired. Honestly, I think they would have been good. I think that I can't remember if Billy Epler said that he thinks that Espada and Quartero are going to be managers within the next couple of years anyway. And I don't think he's wrong about that. I think that these were like, you know, well-regarded names. They come from analytically minded organizations. They serve under well-respected managers. So I think those would have been good choices, but I'm happy with Buck Showalter if nothing else for his clubhouse leadership that he's really well known for. Every single player that you talk to, including Zach Britton, who was the one who was spurned in that decision that he made in the 2016 AL wildcard game to not go to his shutdown closer at a 0.54 ERA or something like that. You know, he said he would play for Buck Showalter again, and he forgives him for the choice. So if the pitcher himself forgives Buck Showalter for the choice, I think that the rest of us can. And Manny Machado, Adam Jones, you name it, every player that has ever played for Buck Showalter has had nothing but amazing things to say about
him. I mean, I just remember, I think it was 2015.
Eating the salted caramel cookie, by the way.
And Papelbon, I think he'd hit him. It was a hit by pitch, and Machado just went down the line, but Buck Showalter was out there immediately. Not really stopping Machado, because Machado was pretty calm. He was just glaring at the asshole for a few minutes. But I mean, Showalter was out there immediately just by his player. So that was an image that stuck with me. So I think I'm looking forward to that from a clubhouse standpoint, but I'm with Linda and Maggie in that it's fine. I will also have more feelings about it when the lockout ends.
Well, what they have to do is fire him, because every team wins after he gets fired. The Diamondbacks, the Yankees.
Oh my god.
I think that's bad luck.
Next year, but if they fire him, they'll win.
I think that's bad luck. I mean, Mariano Rivera was not Mariano Rivera yet when he was, when Showalter was managing him. There was a lot, like, you know.
Yeah, and Sheldon Johnson probably helped too in 2001.
That said, he's gotten to the World Series every 10 years since, was it 94 or was it 2004?
Everybody's complaining about how he's like a career 500 manager, and
I have taken
baseball's a career 500 sport. Like,
the Mets are under 500 lifetime. Like,
that's the whole thing. Like, the past three? Okay, let me think. Luis Rojas, Mickey Callaway, Terry Collins, all under 500. So I'll take an at 500 guy.
You could do, yeah.
So there's improvement there.
I'm really curious to see who he ends up with as a bench coach, because I think that's going to say a lot about the direction that he and the team are looking to go. You know, I don't see him as being one of the crotchety old guys that is like spitefully so. Like, I don't think he is like, yeah, I don't think he's like actively and like violently opposed to
old man yelling at cloud.
Like, yeah, exactly. And so I wouldn't be surprised if they do go for someone who's a little bit of a different feel for the bench coach. I think that could be really a good balance. So that I think like the coaching staff in general, because I think it's just Hefner who's back.
Yes.
So. And he did praise Hefner today too. So it's not like, I mean, yeah.
I mean, it seems like everybody loves Hef, so
I love Hef.
He did a great job, so I think he was the one that, if any of them deserved to keep their job, it was him.
Absolutely. There's just two things that I'll say about Buck Showalter that I think are important to talk about. That, you know, mark my memory of him in Baltimore more than, or like, you know, color my opinion of him more, even more than like that AL wildcard decision, for example, which is like the thing that kind of defines his Baltimore legacy to, like, I guess a lot of wider baseball fans that aren't Orioles fans. And I will plug my own piece for a second here, but I've got like a couple of, like, I've got some content coming out for Mason Avenue, my own piece that I'm going to write, like an editorial style piece about Buck Showalter, where I'm going to talk about some of this stuff in greater detail. And then I also did a Q&A with Camden Chat about Buck Showalter and his time in Baltimore and what to expect from him and things like that. And Mark Brown, bless him, gave really detailed, awesome answers to the questions that I had about him. So look out for those. But in the meantime, I'll say there are kind of two things. The first thing was how the Orioles as a whole organization, but also Buck Showalter, handled the aftermath of the Freddie Gray uprising, which I tweeted about and ended up being like my most viral tweet ever. But I tweeted the video that of Showalter's post-game press conference after the no fans game in 2015, after the Freddie Gray uprising in Baltimore, which at the time, a no fans game was very unprecedented in baseball. Weird to look back on that now and think about how, you know, there was a whole season with no fans. But back then, you know, that was the first time it had ever really happened. And in the aftermath of the press conference, you know, a guy asked Showalter, and this was not a guy, a press guy. This was a guy who just like lives in Baltimore, lives in the neighborhood, asked Showalter, like, you know, what advice would you have for young Black men in the neighborhood? Because this is like really shaking our city and you're really well regarded and revered in this city. Like, what advice would you have? And I thought he gave like one of the best answers I've ever heard to a question like that, where he basically said, like, I don't know what it's like to be Black in America. I don't have your lived experience. Like, he basically, like, every other like old white man characterization would have been like, well, I think we should just buck up and get.
I'm glad you asked me that.
Pull yourselves up by your boots.
Yeah, Steph. Like, I was expecting like that sort of old man answer, like a, you know, unity and like, you know, we need to come together as a city and like a lot of like platitudes. And he was not giving that. He was just like, you know, this breaks my heart and I don't have a good answer because I don't know what it's like to be you. And I thought that that was like really good. And that really made an impression on me. And it's something that I, as someone who was a Baltimore resident at the time, I'll never forget that. And the other thing that really like leaves a lasting impression on me about the kind of guy that Buck Showalter is Kat O'Brien, who wrote about, you know, the persistent and pervasive sexual harassment in the sport. Buck Showalter was one of five non-media people to reach out to her. One of five people to reach out to her in all of baseball about it. And I think that that speaks a lot to who he is, as someone who cares about this stuff. And like, you know, given the string of people that the Mets have had involved,
it might be a first for the Mets
and their track record with sexual harassment, having a guy who actually like seems to care about being an ally in this area.
Non-zero chance that Sandy Alderson Googled what MLB manager doesn't do sexual harassment.
Yes! Honestly, you know, he also Googled Buck Showalter sexual harassment to see if there was any results. But yeah, I mean, like the fact that he actually like demonstrated that he cared about this issue is something that, and I mean, like, again, there are a lot of worst kept secrets in baseball, right? There could be something that comes out tomorrow that makes me, that invalidates literally everything I'm saying right now. I do not deny that that is always a possibility, sadly enough. But like from that standpoint, even though like for, when it comes to managers, like I know that the on-field stuff and the tactician stuff should matter a lot more, but this stuff matters to me too. The fact that he's like a good human being, and a leader of baseball players should also be a leader of men. And I think that Buck Showalter is that guy, at least. So that's my Buck Showalter soapbox. I shall step down now.
So caution.
I think that his wife today with him.
That was such a sweet. See, I didn't get a chance to watch the press conference yet. I was at work. But
I was in a meeting during it, but I watched the whole thing afterwards.
Well, then somebody asked, was it Epler? Like, or is he a 10 out of 10? And then his closing remark, Buck Showalter said, no, the only 10 is right here. And he was talking about his wife. I was like, oh.
He's very good with the press.
Yeah.
That's one thing he is.
Which is something you do need in New York City.
Yeah.
And it was something, you know, I like Luis Rojas, and I think in a few years we may, you know, wish we had him back. But and he was fine when he himself was talking to the press, but he had some young players who needed a lot of help in that regard.
Yeah.
And he did not give it to them.
Yeah.
Or if he tried to give them, they rebuffed him, and that's also bad.
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, again, I think part of that is his inexperience and him trying to find his own way around the New York media. Yeah. So
who are great. And like, I say that, you know, as I guess, do we count as New York media? Oh.
I don't know.
Count as New Jersey media.
I'm not putting that stink on myself. No.
But, and I mean, and also like there are some Mets media folks who we know and love, but like in general, it's a freaking madhouse over here. Like it's the tabloid like culture, and it's
too many of them.
There are too many of them, and a bunch of them just really want a story and don't particularly care which way they go about doing that.
Yeah.
So
but where's Dave Jowse? What's he up to?
Drinking coffee, I'm sure.
Probably.
Mark Gehrig.
But
cautious optimism in regards to Showalter.
Yeah,
I think
could have been worse.
Well, that's also, I feel like we get to mark another little number in our like days since the Mets were a national embarrassment.
Yes,
it's true. And the counter's going up.
Yes, I was waiting to find out. Like, okay, how is this going to be embarrassing? They haven't embarrassed themselves in a long time. It's difficult during a lockout, but like, I was sure that they would find a way, but.
I mean, I think it's a silver, I don't want to say a silver lining of the lockout, but it's interesting that they can just focus totally on the coaching staff and kind of really make those decisions without having to worry about player signings as well. So I don't want to call it a silver lining because the whole thing is just bad, but
it's funny.
But they needed some time.
Yeah, they needed time.
It's funny because the Mets are even more in the spotlight than they usually are. Cause like we talked about the New York media and how this team is like overcovered sort of, but like it's even more so now because during the lockout, the Mets are basically the only news because they're filling their managerial vacancy. And so it was like, now they've done that. And so now that was the only like news in town. And so now I feel like there's going to be like national coverage of the Mets, like damn, like coaching staff, which is going to be really weird, but it, like there's nothing else to talk about.
But yeah, we kind of got lucky in that regard. Like, what were other teams doing? Like, they must be bored. Like, at least we had something to like.
The A's hired Mark Kotze or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I was thinking about because Maggie mentioned the like days since we were an embarrassment counter, and I was like, when's the last time we actually ticked that down to zero? And I thought it was when Steve Cohen made that tweet after the Steven Matz thing, because that was pretty embarrassing. About the like the 2004 aim away message ass like tweet where he was like, I guess promises don't matter. And I was like, oh my god.
I realized that in retrospect. It was not so bad given what followed.
It's true.
I still think we count as being a national embarrassment that day.
That was definitely the day. But I realized that we did put the counter back down to zero once after that because Zach Scott got COVID, and that's the reason that that his verdict was delayed. You guys didn't know that?
Yes,
I didn't know that, but I forgot.
I forgot too.
There was supposed to be a verdict in Zach Scott's drunk driving case, but it got delayed because he got COVID.
All of this is terrible. Like,
it's terrible.
I had no idea about this. Well, I was probably so grad schooled and work and because I haven't. I'm done with my first semester, so I can actually finally like read stuff again and read what I want and read about the Mets without being stressed out by other things. So I just learned something.
That is
today.
indeed a thing that happens. But I don't like. So it's debatable whether that counts as turning the counter back to zero because Zach Scott is no longer with the organization, but he is associated with the Mets and he did do the drunk driving when he was
with them.
If so the headline said ex-Mets GM, it counts.
It counts. Yeah. So I think that's actually the last time the counter went to zero, but that's still pretty good. It's a pretty good
streak.
Moving
in the right direction.
Yeah.
Pretty good streak.
Hopefully that's the last one now.
Yeah.
Your head's not made of wood, Linda.
This pesk is.
Wait.
Next flavor. I vote for the yellow one because
I was gonna say yellow too.
I was also gonna say yellow.
Okay.
Yellow. Lemon,
mango, passion fruit.
Lemon.
Strawberry and lemon. I'm two for two.
Could eat the strawberry and lemon together.
That'd be tasty.
Mm. These are too rich to eat together.
Yeah, they kind of are. Savored. Going back to my point about Buck Showalter and being good on sexual harassment, sexual harassment continues to be a problem that is pervasive throughout the sport. And Kellyanne's already putting her head down. It's the sexual assault section of the podcast that we have to have all the time, seemingly, because this is the world we live in.
Live in a hell place.
But yeah, there was a pretty, like, I don't know, I think it's fair to call it a bombshell of sorts, even though no one paid attention to it, but I thought it was pretty significant. There was a rather significant report from the Washington Post recently that allegations of sexual assault against Yasiel Puig were kept hidden for years. Years. MLB learned of these allegations from two women in 2017 and did not place him on administrative leave during their investigation of these incidents. And he was allowed to keep playing. So he just kept playing baseball. And this was during like Puig's like prime of his career, basically. He was playing the whole time, even though there were these two allegations against him from two women. He settled them confidentially, and no one found out about it until there was a third woman and that's the recent one that people know about.
Yeah.
So there was a more recent one that people know about. And that's the one that like became public because those settlement you know, negotiations like fell apart. And so she went like public with it. And so that's how we learned of these other ones, because like those kind of emerged in this reporting when they were looking into this other sexual assault allegation against him. So yeah, that's not good. The league just like decided, I'm just going to let him keep playing.
And it left him free to assault more women too, a lot, clearly. Like, yep.
That concerns me, not just because of him, but it also concerns me because how many other players are they doing?
Yes, that is the correct answer. That is the correct question to be asking.
Yeah.
Is not exactly if there are more, but how many and who?
Who they are.
And like, yeah, if you're a star, like since he was playing well, did he get different treatment than like if he was a bench player? Or was it the Dodgers organization? Because we
are
know
there they prior have a reports they're of Trevor Bauer? List. Has MLB been sitting on those for some number of years?
Like, dude, like if he played on like the Rockies, would they've investigated harder than if he played on the Dodgers? Because it seems like the Dodgers seem to keep having these issues that keep popping up. And
yep. Well, they were the team with the crimes list, right?
Yeah, crimes.xlsx.
And they had Kapler. He covered up an assault for them,
yes,
too.
Yes, that's correct. Kapler played a role in covering up an assault. And the perpetrator of that assault is an active player still. But on the part of Puig, worth noting, so this was by far not the most important part of this article. Like, obviously there was like, you know, testimony from the women and their lawyers.
It's another like major trigger warning article.
Yeah. And I'm not going to go into any detail.
I'm just like warning anybody who's like, I should like, yeah, you should, but also like, be ready.
Brace yourself.
We'll link the article.
Don't read it at work.
No. Yeah, don't read it work. We'll link the article in the show notes and the tweets and stuff. And I'm not going to go into detail about what these allegations entail and what he did. But that's all there for you to read if you feel up to it. But what I will note in this article, even though it's not the most important part of it, but it's something that stuck out to me, was that Trevor Bauer's film company, Momentum, produced an online video series called La Vida de Puig that covered him like signing with Rachel Luba, who is obviously Trevor Bauer's agent, and also was Puig's agent up until like very recently. Actually, he parted ways with her in like November, like just like a couple months ago. And then he just recently signed a deal to play in the KBO, like right after he and she parted ways. But anyway, she was his agent.
South Korea also famously lenient on sexual assaults.
Yeah.
Committers.
So Trevor Bauer's like film company like filmed this series that was like this like weird like redemption arc film series, and like one of them was called Puig the most misunderstood player in baseball. And it was like about him, like it was like all these like videos of his like day-to-day life and trying to like redeem him and make him like seem cool and like Puig your friend, like that whole thing.
I will say right now, I liked Puig a lot.
I did too.
His like personality as a player, and I thought he was like really like got, you know, the shitty end of the stick from a lot of the coverage. And like, whew, was I wrong? He's a friggin' psychopath.
Yep.
I mean,
get him out of baseball, all baseball. Yeah. What the hell? And MLB. Yeah. Like, I might have known that earlier if MLB hadn't been incredibly unethical about it.
Yep.
I mean, and I feel like we saw some of that. I mean, his personality was great, but as he got deeper into his career, the personality kind of splintered apart in subtle ways, at least to me. Because I liked him in the beginning, and then I was just like, okay, the antics are a little much on the field. So, yeah, there to me were signs of not, obviously not what happened, but signs of him not being altogether, I don't know, personality was starting to affect him negatively. That makes sense.
Worth noting that Bauer's people, of course, deny that Bauer was involved in this film or like anything like that. They say that Puig's manager independently approached Momentum. But of course, as we all know, this is a club and these people protect each other and they will keep doing that every time.
Well, and that's the part that got me too. It said like Rachel Luba declined comment. It's like she talks about everything. She took credit for Max Scherzer signing.
Oh my God. But when it comes to
sexual assault, she has.
Yes, did you know Rachel Luba invented short. Oh yeah, Kellyanne, you didn't hear about that. Value?
Yeah. Again, grad school. I haven't. What?
She tweeted. She made a tweet that was like. Like basically saying that I'm blocked
by her.
Basically saying that Scherzer had Bauer to thank because he set the precedent for like the high AAV short term. Oh,
give
deal,
me a freaking break!
Which is not even true.
Break. No,
not even true. Also, Max Scherzer is a 37-year-old who's signing an eight-year contract. Like
a three-time Cy Young award, but
I'm sure he's very grateful to you, Rachel.
Kellyanne just had a seizure, I think, everybody. But like, and Max Scherzer is got the short term deal because he is 37 or however.
Yeah, he's not signing an 8-year deal.
Like like Bauer got a similar deal when he's supposedly in the prime of his career.
He got it because he's volatile,
and nobody trusts that he's actually good. So
yeah,
right. Anyway. So yeah, that's a thing, but like, yeah. So the other point made in this article or like item from this article is that Puig, against the latest accuser, the one that went public, Puig filed a counterclaim against this abuser to recoup lost salary from like all his legal fees and stuff like that. He claims that he would have been that teams. Basically he thinks that he's being blackballed from baseball. And that he had to go to Korea because of these accusations, which are all false because I'm like, none of these are true. I didn't do any of this stuff. And so he thinks that he is entitled to lost salary because teams avoided signing him, which he's not.
I'm playing the world's tiniest violin.
And he also complained that he's out of money because he has had to pay all his lawyer fees. And I'm like, ooh, boo, hoo. That's the situation. But it was like, you know, to me, it was less about like, obviously, we already knew about the one public thing from Puig. And like, obviously, it's the reason that this report is like kind of earth shattering is not about Puig. It's about the fact that MLB cover up. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like,
and what else are they covering up?
Like, is this surprising? Not really. But it's just one more like drop in the giant bucket of like MLB clearly is wholly incapable of handling any sort of
and not interested misconduct in.
And not exactly, interested yeah. in doing so. So
I mean, we have the discourse of like people voting for Schilling, voting for Viscal right now.
Yeah, this comes in the midst of Hall of Fame voting when people are willingly checking boxes next to abusers and just like not giving a shit at all.
Well, and that's why, like, Sandy Alderson's comments in May didn't get him into any real trouble, you know, when he was basically, like, I mean, really, as close to literally saying, like, who cares? It's not that big a deal. It's because those comments aren't the exception in MLB.
No.
And it's sad
that's the mentality.
It's sad that I have to sit here and get excited about a manager who, like, does the bare minimum of caring, but like that's where I'm at. I'm like, oh hell yeah, a guy who like actually called a woman who talked about sexual abuse in baseball and was like, I support you, like, wow, what a star. Like, that's the bar. It's sad,
and it's in the basement.
Yeah, in Hades. It's not even the floor,
it's in Hades. Literally the depths of Hades. Anyway, so
speaking of the depths of Hades, I do want to make a pitch for when you are making your ginger cookies, you want to put a little black pepper in there.
Oh,
not really? A lot, but you want to get that little prickly, just a bit, just about I think it's a big batch and it takes about a half a teaspoon.
Okay. I was going to say like a literal pinch or no.
No, like I mean, I don't know. I just do like.
Okay.
A bunch of, crack. I've made them a lot, but
a fair number of cracks.
So that's where you want to get your heat coming from instead of the fiery tongues of hellfire. for all the horrible things that you could do in Hades. That's my suggestion. Get a little black pepper in your ginger cookies.
But anyway, as we finish up our cookies, we will finish up the show like we always do with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about something that's making us happy this week, baseball related or otherwise. Kellyanne Healy, I think I know what your walk-off win is, so we'll start with you.
Okay, wait, before that, final cookie.
Go with chocolate. The beige. So.
Okay.
Go for vanilla.
I vote chocolate.
Okay.
Chocolate.
I'm gonna hold. I wanted to kind of find out what this one was, if it's vanilla or if it's almond.
Eat that
or
one
something else entirely.
Eat that
Go
one.
Go for it.
I would have to go with vanilla, but this is very bland.
Hmm. Vanilla is generally bland unless you like really overdo it.
Hmm. That's too bad.
But this is a very plain cookie.
So what would you, how would you rank your cookies?
Lemon, strawberry, this, raspberry.
No, okay. Yeah. Well, you really did not like the raspberry.
I didn't like the raspberry. I mean, I shouldn't say I didn't like it, but it's not my go-to flavor.
Allison, how was your gingerbread cookie?
It was good. I liked it. I prefer...
I didn't compare to yours, Maggie.
I'm sure yours are better, but I prefer like a soft cookie to a hard cookie. Even like...
Well, a lot of people... So the reason that most people, when they make ginger cookies at home, they're either making like the hard, snappy kind... or like the firm gingerbread, is because molasses is such a pain to work with. But what you do, here's the thing, is when the dough comes together, you dump it into some like plastic wrap and kind of smush it flat and stick it in the freezer for 20 minutes. That's it. Truly, like once it comes out, you gotta move pretty quickly. You can always pop it back in the freezer for another minute, but that's sticky, that like where you feel like you have half of the ball of cookie on your hands instead of in the ball, like totally resolves that issue. And then I also, and the reason that these are here for me to eat now is because I didn't do this, and so they were too thin for my gifting purposes, is I like to pop them back into the freezer once they've been pressed into place on the cookie sheet so that they don't spread quite so much.
That makes sense.
So yeah, so that's my little ginger cookie spiel. I will link the recipe tomorrow on Twitter.
Baking with Maggie.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so my walk-off win. If you've been following me on Twitter, you know I just finished my first semester of graduate school on official Monday. I posted a picture of all the papers I did this semester, and I didn't realize it was like so many, and they were so thick. It was like this thick. All my papers all together. It's like, man, that's a forest right there. But it was a great semester, but it was also a stressful semester, especially there's a lot going on in my personal life right now too. So I'm happy to de-stress from that for a month. That is my walk-off win.
You've earned it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Linda Servich, what is your walk-off win for this week?
Well, I have a couple. Well, my first is my tree back there.
Yeah,
it's very pretty.
I got my tree. And for the longest time, I don't have a light switch in my kitchen, so I only had the ceiling fan, and then the chain was sticking in the ceiling fan, so I couldn't turn it off, so I wasn't turning it on. So I didn't have light in my kitchen for the longest time, and now I finally got that fixed.
Good.
Oh, and then I got a new stove, so I have a new stove. So I baked my cookies on my new stove.
Yay!
So I feel like I'm like settling in, you know, things are moving.
You gonna make that ham?
Huh?
You gonna make that ham?
I don't know. I'm kind of debating about making the ham. I'm kind of scared about making the ham.
Don't be scared of ham. It's the easiest thing.
Don't be scared of ham.
Like, don't spill the ham juice on your foot. Don't ask me how I know that.
Maggie, did you spill juice on your foot?
I did.
I have to ask.
Well, I was wearing socks at the time, so it like I couldn't like get it away from me. And I had my first moment of like true fight or flight. And I just ran into the other room. I didn't know what to do. So I just like ran. But anyway, I love to tell the tale.
Okay, I'll keep that under advisement, not to
spell. But otherwise, yeah, I'm super easy.
So I feel like, you know, I'm finally like settling in. Plus it ups the value of the place. Which is also a good thing.
Very homeownery.
Yes. So I'm enjoying my new fan. I'm enjoying my new stove. I'm enjoying my new tree that Maddie is not leaving alone. So I have like I don't know if you can see, like there's that one like little bare spot like to the side there. That's like Maddie range, so I can't put anything right there. Like that's like anything that she can reach. So all my stuff top. So there was that, my cookies that a nice patron and her daughters left me. And then my final thing is I did see Spider-Man. And it was really good. It was everything everybody said. I went to a matinee by myself. It was the first time I ever went to the movies by myself because I'm like, I don't want to be spoiled, but COVID.
But you've never been to the movies by yourself?
No.
It's fun. It's great.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay. I had off on Monday.
All
like,
the popcorn.
Huh? And I had all two armrests too. So I had a whole row to myself. There was only like 20 people in the theater because I went to a 1 o'clock showing it on Monday.
Matinees are the best.
So I probably didn't get the full theater experience because like, you know, everybody was going crazy and everything. But I'm like, oh, so.
You also didn't get the full theater COVID experience.
That's the thing. I'm like, I didn't, you know, it's close to Christmas. And I'm like, I wanted to see it, but I wanted to be safe. So. And so I'm glad I went, you know, but then, like I said, I've been sick and I'm like, the last thing people need is like me coming and coughing. So I did break a bottle of water. And I'm like trying to like sneak it under my mask. Like, I don't want to be like the pariah in the theater. But there was a Mets reference in there too, which was awesome. Yeah, there was. I was very excited. I'm like, oh my God!
Michael literally grabbed my leg and squeezed it. When the Mets reference happened, he was like, I was like, yes, Leonardo DiCaprio dot JPEG. I did see. Yes.
So like, we know the Mets exist, but they've never confirmed the Yankees exist in the MCU. So I'm very happy that like, you know, the Mets
are the only team in the MCU.
Yeah. And they did get Thanos in Endgame. So I guess they're all back now. I guess they're okay.
Wait, the whole Mets got Thanos?
Well,
That wouldn't surprise me.
They were in the therapy group.
And it was like a
Mets.
And they showed the abandoned city field and everything.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
So I figured they were all gone.
That would be so Mets. Oh my God. 50% of the world vanishes and somehow it's like 90% of the Mets. I'm like, of course.
Yeah.
This is so hilarious because I don't know what any of you are talking about.
I even wrote an article about it trying to pinpoint what game they're playing when they got that house. Because I'm like, there's cars in the parking lot. So it must have been a big game. But they stink. So what game could have possibly been? And I came to the conclusion it was the David Wright retirement game.
Oh,
that's a good one.
Could win that one.
So my conclusion was, since that game went extra innings, everybody turned to dust before the game ever concluded. So that meant David Wright never retired.
I was going to say, does that mean David Wright never retired? Good.
Well, but now he did.
He's also dead.
He was the only one left.
Everybody who was Thanos came back.
Yeah. Okay. So he's back and now retired.
Because his back is still fucked up. It's still the Mets.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
So that was my entire like nerdy article that I wrote, like trying to dissect a 1 second clip of City Field in Endgame.
Computer enhanced, and it's sort of like zooming in.
I appreciate your dedication to that, Linda.
But Mike Piazza also exists because Peter Parker had a Mike Piazza pennant in his room. So Mike Piazza also exists in the MCU.
It's true.
So, like, you know, that was me nerding out. Spider-Man was good. It lived up to the hype.
Yep. Go see Spider-Man. Your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man is your friendly neighborhood Mets fan from Queens.
Yes. Yes.
We love to see it, don't we, folks?
I have one thing to say, Spider-Man. Let's go Mets, baby. Mets.
I have something to say, Spider-Man. Let's go Mets, baby. Love the Mets.
Love the Mets.
Anyway, Maggie Wiggin, what is your walk-off one for this week?
I thought I would come up with a good one by now. It has not been like my walk-off wittiest of weeks, but I mean, I'm definitely psyched that the holidays are coming up. I got the kids some awesome shit. And that's like a legit, like, I'm not just being like, oh, poor me, I'm excited about my children's presents. Like, no, no, no. If I could buy my kids like huge toys every day, I would. I love that shit. But I guess, you know, I would say is my in-laws arrived in the city from South. These are the South Dakota in-laws that put us up for 4 months last year. So
that, you guys are the whole reason why Jacob DeGrom is the most popular player in South Dakota.
They swear. They swear they don't know what that is. But, you know, they're very supportive. They're very like uplifting of the people in their family. And they are 100% the kind of people who'd be like, what is Jacob DeGrom doing? So they could then text me like, I hear Jacob DeGrom pitched very well. just to make me feel good about my thing. Like that's just, and so that's something that's really lovely. It's just that they're going to be around for like a month. It's the best combination of circumstances in that they are here locally and they are not staying with us. So it's really like,
best
there will be
worlds.
No... like visitors and fish stick in 3 days, like none of that business. We just get them around and in our lives. They dropped off 2 suitcases the size of Wisconsin filled with presents for my children. So like, that's also good. I genuinely, like, I have no idea what I'm gonna do with them. They don't fit under, they're not gonna fit under the tree. Like, but okay, good problem to have. They're lovely. And it's my father-in-law's birthday on Christmas Eve. We call it Jeffmas.
Happy birthday.
His parents must have been absolute like saints on earth because he loves having a birthday on Christmas Eve. And I've never known any human to feel that way. So, but they're just like special. They're just special people like that. Like it is not surprising that he loves having a Christmas Eve birthday. So yes, welcome Jeff and Barbara and preliminary happy birthday to Jeff.
My Nana's birthday was on Christmas, but she was a Jew, so it didn't matter. from that perspective. But
he's the first in a like bizarre line of family birthdays, because Jeff's birthday is Christmas Eve, and David, my husband's birthday, is Valentine's Day, and Thomas, my son's birthday, is the 4th of July.
Oh,
and he was due a week earlier, and everyone's like, no way, he's gonna be born on the 4th of July because of the holiday thing. And I was like, he better not be born on the 4th of July. And I'm not carrying around this baby for 7 extra days. And I did.
And yet,
here we are.
It happened. Yeah,
so that's just a fun little bit of like Wiggin family trivia.
Excellent. Excellent. We love our holiday birthdays.
Comment if you have one too.
Yeah, it's true. Tell us. Yeah.
I'm the first day of summer sometimes in a blue moon.
So close.
I was always the first day back from winter vacation. So that was always,
Oh, that's right. Your birthday's coming up too.
Yeah.
Happy early birthday.
Thanks.
No, she's not happy about that. I know. I mentioned it.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned it. So.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I took the cue from you.
My birthday's not on Halloween, but it's close. And so my birthday is always a costume party. And so that I love. So I do love having Halloween birthday. It's great.
Until we got married, our anniversary was Halloween because that was when we started going out. So that was, I always liked having a Halloween anniversary because you can get a reservation anywhere.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
Truth. True that. My walk-off win for this week is that, yesterday, we had our like friends virtual secret snowman exchange on Zoom, and it was lovely. And it was just like, it was really nice, like getting to like open presents and just like chat and like getting to reveal and like having people guess who bought what things and then revealing it. And I got My friend Michelle, which is who the person that I had, she just got married. She and our other friend Brittany just got married, and so I made the one of their wedding photos into a Christmas ornament, and she didn't know about it. And it was very, very heartwarming to watch her open it and be like, "Oh, it's so nice! I'm gonna hang it on the tree." And I was like, "Yay!" And yeah, it was just really nice getting to open gifts and chat with my friends over Zoom, even if we couldn't do it in person. I think that like it'll be a nice tradition to have. Like, we've done it in person before, but like it'll be a nice tradition to have because, like, you know, we don't all live like super close to each other, so like there are probably going to be years where we can't gather even if COVID's not a thing. So it'll be nice to just, you know, have this as a tradition moving forward, so it'll be great. So that's my walk-up win. In the meantime, I hope you all have a very wonderful holiday season. And if this is a tough time for you, we understand it's not an easy time for people all the time. We're thinking of you, and we hope that you have a nice new year, and we will see you again in the new year.
2022.
Yes. 2022.
Yes. In the meantime,
actually, our next one is my birthday.
It is indeed. Our next pod is Linda's birthday. But Linda might have off. We'll see.
We'll depend on my mood.
Depend on Linda's.
She's grouchy mood. Like she isn't even actually younger than me anyway.
Right.
But it's fine.
If you're grouchy, it'll put you in the right mood to talk about the Mets. It's perfect.
Age is just a flipping number, you guys.
Forever young.
It's true. My body is old too.
Yeah.
I'm like breaking down.
But
my back.
All having lower back issues on this podcast.
My apologies to everyone watching this who has an age that starts with a 4, because you probably think we are a bunch of assholes.
All of our ages start with 3, which is not going to be true eventually, I guess. But listen, for now,
40 plus, you guys are young.
For a while, I was the only one in this on this podcast in my 20s.
Yeah. You're the baby.
I am. I'm younger than Kellyanne only by a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
I'm the older.
You're 31 right now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm the veteran leadership.
I'm a relatively recent 31-year-old. I turned 31.
I'm the journeyman pitcher at this point.
I am a 32 and a half plus one day year old.
Oh, happy half birthday. Belated.
Thank you.
I'll be 37. I will officially be like hanging on for dear life. I am signing minor league deals from here on.
Listen, Max Scherzer just made $130 million.
Yeah, you got to think of
what's
that.
What's your excuse?
I have so many of them. Okay, I'm 5'2". I crack under pressure.
I've had 2 kids. yeah. Anyway, during your holiday lull, hopefully you have some time off work. If not off work, then, you know, a chill time at work. During that time, you can go to amazingavenue.com, check out all of our fantastic content. I already previewed some of it for you. I've got 2 Scherzer. I mean, 2 Scherzer, 2 Showalter. They both start with sh. I have 2 Showalter pieces coming out for you in the next few days. And you can follow the site on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can follow this show on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Serovich.
You, Maggie?
At Maggie162.
Kellyanne?
At LRB. ELLARE BEE.
And you can subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. Please do so. Amazing Avenue Audio. Rate and review the show. It really helps people find it. The original intro and outro music to the podcast, if you're hearing the podcast and not watching live right now, is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in podcasts.
Cover Story, a new investigative podcast from New York Magazine that's uncovering some secrets from the psychedelic underground.
So basically, in December of 2019, Dave got an email from this woman.
Hi there. I am a student at California Institute of Integral Studies
in the weekend program. I had an experience in my first 2 years where I was essentially recruited by a TA into an underground guide training program.
She had been training to become a psychedelic therapist with Francoise and her husband in this underground training program that they had.
Hello.
And she'd already reached out to James Kent, another podcaster that we know.
Hi, this is James.
Hi, how are you?
Because she was feeling really weirded out.
I felt like I woke up from something and I was like, who else is awake?
You're on speakerphone. Do you mind if I record this conversation? I know.
Listening to the tape of her.
I was just sort of reaching out to you because I'm like, it's happening. Like,
it's really clear that she was trying to find other people who understood what she'd been through or who could see what she saw.
I'd really appreciate it if you didn't use my name or anything.
No, for now.
And eventually she was sent to us.
I was searching for anyone who, like, would get it.
And talking to her is actually what really kicked off our investigation.
Check out Cover Story, Season 1, Power Trip, on Apple or wherever you listen.